Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell and I'm sitting here with Ben Hunter. We're very excited to be sitting across from Fiona McIntosh, who's coming to talk about her new novel, her new best-selling novel, because we're already selling this thing like crazy, The Pearl Thief. Welcome, Fiona.
Thank you. Lovely to be back.
Now, Ben may have caught your attention earlier in the year where he wrote a stunning review of your book. Did you happen to catch that?
I did. I was so impressed. I put it out on social media straight away. It was the first review, Ben, and it was very exciting that you reacted in the way that I could only dream that, you know, any audience would react. Because I feel in my heart that this is me at my best. You know, it's sometimes you're not aware of your own storytelling, but with this particular book, I was.
That's fantastic.
I was highly aware of what I was writing and were
you
loving
caught up,
it.
And were you caught up within the story while you were writing it?
Yes, I felt like this character, the main character, and I'm going to try not to give away too much.
But yeah, this is quite tricky.
Yes,
thinking about how to do this.
Severin, you had trouble writing the review.
Yes, well, Severin, she arrived and tapped me on the shoulder, and she was whole. I didn't have to think about who are you, what do you look like, what's your backstory. She arrived complete into my mind, and I felt like I knew her, and I was walking with her, and all the damage and trauma and torment that she goes through, you know, I felt like I understood it all. And so that's why I say I felt like it was my best work, and I was highly aware of it as well. So I needed people to agree with me, and when my editor agreed, that was great. But when a stranger agrees, when somebody very...
well, I'm sure you're going to see so much more of that now that it's out in the market.
Thank
and,
you.
And selling.
I love the fact that even after all your success, book after book being bestsellers, that you still... Yeah, you look out there and go, what are people saying about my book? Yeah, is it the same every time? Is it like, I've been working on this by myself for so long. It's now going out there in the world. Is the anxiety as it was all the way through? Or is it?
Yes. I think, there's fear that, you know, are you reading it wrong? Mm. Most of the time you've got this lovely audience waiting for your book to come out. But with this one, it felt there was a lot more tension because I felt it was a ball terror and, the kind of book I want to read and the kind of book I want to write. And I just needed the audience to react, very positively towards it. And so far, the comments are very much weighted with me saying, this is, what are you smoking? What are you drinking? You know, what are you doing? This is quite different to, you know, you've taken it a step up. In other words, it's gone a bit darker, a bit edgier.
Oh yeah. There's some real darkness in this book.
Yes.
Well, this could be a bit of a coup for us. I mean, Lee Child was very open about what he smoked during the ride. Are we going to get some sort of inside information about what goes?
Chocolate cigarettes, yes, or something like that.
These little extra little pieces of the puzzle coming together.
And a little Pedro Jimenez, maybe, just a little nip of...
Fiona, this book takes us into Paris and London... in 1963, in a kind of fantastic era of change. But before we visit that, we see Prague under the shadow or the coming shadow of Nazism. And that's a brilliant sort of contrast. And this moment you see in Prague plants a seed that grow into a beautiful thing, beautiful and horrifying at times thing throughout the novel. Can you take us to Prague and what drew you to that scene, because that just shines out for me, that moment. And I once visited Prague and I just think it's the most magical city. And you layered that into the page really beautifully right from the outset here.
Thank you, Ben. For me, every book starts with place. I don't start with character and I don't start with story. I start with place. And I really do ask myself, where do people want to armchair travel with me in this story? And I have visited Prague many times myself and I sort of had a feeling for its history. And I finally felt it was time to get into Eastern Europe. And the minute you go into Eastern Europe and you think about somewhere as beautiful as Prague, you know that that shadow was occupation during the Second World War. And the minute you get into you know, the stomp of armies occupying those beautiful cobblestone streets, you start to think of the Nazi idealism, and then you inevitably get to the Jewish disaster and torment. And so I decided that's what led me there. I began with Prague as a city, thinking I want to write this beautiful story in Prague and make it become a character in the story. But then I found myself, because I don't plan anything, John, I found myself, you know, thinking about the Nazis and occupation and a family under torment. And I didn't want it to be about roundups and going off to concentration camps. I wanted it to be a survivor. So I always knew I wanted this story to rip us through into the 60s, and it would be the grown-up woman sort of turning around to confront the pain of the war.
And on that thing of place, there's this fantastic contrast that you've driven, this juxtaposition between the coming change of Nazism in Prague in the 1930s and then 1963 in Paris, and then in London in particular, where you still have this wartime austerity, but you see the dawning of this sort of new age on the horizon politically and culturally.
That whole thing of the swinging 60s, they didn't want to know about. I mean, there was a sense of trying to cast off the shackles of austerity and war. And so the colours became bright and people were wearing weird and wonderful clothes. And it was all about looking forward and having a good time. And no one wanted to talk about war. And that's what makes this character so tragic, I suppose, that she's had so much damage and pain. But she's sort of reinvented herself and glued herself together. That it's there's got to be a trigger, and I had to think about what is going to trigger that meltdown that makes her revisit all that pain. So I thought London was a lovely backdrop. Again, another character in the book, that it's this great, vibrant, happening city with all this torment that's about to unleash within this woman.
We know you like to visit the places you write about, but dealing with the historical stuff, how do you blend what you're experiencing of London now, because London's a very different place to 1963. It's just it's brash, it's older, it's cleaner. there's a whole range of things that have changed. But you're walking those streets. Are you walking in your imagination, trying to put together 1963 as you're wandering through the streets of London?
Yes, and I'll usually have a guide or an historian with me.
Really? So,
yes. I have a very good friend who's an historian, which is very fortunate. You need one of those on your side if you're writing history. But also I'll hire guides. In Prague, for example, I hired a guide so that we could recreate wartime Prague properly, authentically, get it absolutely credible with the food and what the houses looked like and, you know, what people were actually doing. And likewise in London and Paris, I had a guide in Paris and I had a guide in London to help me recreate that moment. Because as you say, you can walk the streets now, but you have to just tear back decades and decades and decades. And you have to try and find the buildings that were and the venues that were big in the 60s. And so the Café Royal in, you know, at Piccadilly was one of those. And that's one of the settings for a turning point in the story. And it was very big with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor and the Rolling Stones and things like this. So, you know, I had to go and find those places. Interestingly enough, just as an aside, though, the story goes up to Yorkshire, as you know. I don't know if you were going to get onto that, but my editor loved this story, and she was very excited, and she was waxing so lyrical about it. And I said, "Oh, come on, there's got to be something that's not quite right about it." And she said, "Well, okay, if you press me." And I said, "I'm pressing you." And she said, "It's a little bit claustrophobic at times." And I said, I didn't mind her saying that, but I said, "But it's winter, you know, everything's happening in winter, so everybody's indoors." And she said, "Yes, but we've become used to your beautiful landscapes. I wonder if you could just pop in a couple of lovely outdoor scenes for us." And that was the end of the conversation. And I was left hanging on the end of the phone, and I just jumped onto a plane. Literally within 48 hours, I was on a plane to Yorkshire. to go and find these outdoor scenes that she needed. And she had no idea I was doing this. When she found out, she rang me and she said, I didn't mean for that to happen. And I said, no, this is on you. You know, this is all of you've created this. And the funny part of it was I did find this fabulous landscape up in Yorkshire, Robin Hood's Bay.
Mm.
And it was gloriously frozen. It was in January that I went there and it was perfect. And I thought, great. So went home. I was only on the ground for 48 hours as well. I was in and out.
How do you do that?
I know. I was in and out literally.
That's a big book.
Within a working week, I was back and sitting at my desk and trying to write this scene. And when I wrote it, I realized the damage that had just been done because all the characters were now in the wrong place.
Yes.
Everyone was not where they should be.
Because I can't picture this happening. This,
yes.
This reading the finished thing is flawless.
Well, I had to just chop off from the moment our characters go to Yorkshire, or one of them does, and the second one arrives that wasn't supposed to be back, there in the story. Everything from there was a rewrite.
Oh.
And my poor editor was saying, I didn't mean for this to happen. I really did not mean. And I said, it's your fault. Now you've just got to trust me that I can write a whole new ending for this story.
Yeah,
I had to rewrite.
In doing that, you introduced a whole new layer of polish.
Absolutely.
That you might not have had the opportunity to.
It is so much better for those words. It's a little claustrophobic because it really, it really set off this chain reaction and forced me to say, okay, right, well, we've got to do all of this new layer. And you sort of scrutinize the story again and you go,
yeah,
as you say, you add new layers and new people came in. The person I thought might help rather heroically at the end was missing. Someone else came running into the story that I didn't expect. And then another character comes back into the story.
Oh, wow.
And I had to do it.
This is a lot of change.
It was a lot of change. It was a real, my head was just spinning with jet lag and with having to rewrite those scenes. But we got it done. And at the end, I thought, gosh, what if she hadn't said that? And I was so happy with it before then.
I know, but you're a book a year person. Those kind of changes. Like you were describing as you were talking before this podcast, how you're finishing the next book and you've got your other book going, the following
research
book after that.
Research is done.
Researching, like, just mind-boggling that you can actually take that risk at that moment to go.
Have to go.
And have to go and then come back and go, that has to go.
Yes, and send it and go and hope that your editor loves it. And she did. She said, oh, yeah, no, I was there. It was just like, there was oxygen. There was all this oxygen. And she was very excited. And I was just thrilled that it worked. Because all the chess pieces, having to move them all around again was incredible. But
yeah, so any of those writers out there who are moaning about a couple of passages being taken out of their book, get over yourselves.
Yes,
you're
yes.
talking to yourself, John.
When you have to go to bed over that little edit.
Well, I haven't even started the next one, so I can't even cut anything out of it. It's just empty page. This is where we turn into that. How do I write my next book? I haven't got a clue.
Don't plan it. Just
plan.
Write
okay,
it.
Just sit down
just
and write.
Just sit down and write. Yes.
Oh, God. And are we allowed to talk about the books that are coming? Or
sure,
are we...
why not? The next book is set in Africa because I like to really change it up from the previous book so that the audience really feels we've left that behind. Because if you write another wartime story set in Europe, the danger is there's a comparison. The interesting thing about the experience of writing the next book, is that because I was so aware of The Pearl Thief and I feel that it's my favorite book and my best book to date, I've got The Pearl Thief sitting on my shoulder saying, you're not as good as me, are you? I'm having to give that a big flick all the time. And that's never happened to me before either. But in a fit of sort of panic, I sent off the first 12 chapters to my editor. And I said, can you just read this and just give me some sense of it? Because I've fallen back into that, I'm dislocated from it. And she said, you've got nothing to worry about. She said, better. And I can't believe she said that. I can't believe it. And I'm not prepared to give up The Pearl Thief yet. But she said, Fiona, it's awesome. So she said, just carry on.
And have you, please do. You've been flying back and forth between here
yes,
and
because she, when she was telling me that, I was about to go off to France to start researching the 2020 book. And she said, look, I need to put you in the right headspace. I need to tell you it's fabulous. And you are to get on that flight and just... I said, I can fly myself to France now. I feel so good that you've told me that. So I'm not normally needy, but it just... Sometimes when you write something and you know it's going to be a hit with people, it's daunting, you know?
How do you think the layers of research are affecting? Because you're talking so warmly about The Pearl Thief, and in previous books you've touched on the Holocaust and done a lot of research on the Holocaust and gone right there, in there.
Yes.
And some of the most moving scenes you've written, I think, are in camp. Do those things help? Like, do they give you, like, one of the things, that old knowledge is so good for a writer,
yes,
rather than just freshly researched stuff.
That's lovely you say that, old knowledge. That's a lovely phrase. And I think that does come in all the time, that I have this sort of real understanding of the Holocaust and understanding of the Jewish plight during the Second World War. And so it all, they're like crows, they all come back and sit there with me whilst I'm writing, and as you say, sort of nourish the emotion that has to go into the story. But I do always think that each story for me is virgin territory, and so I must just put on a lens for that book, and whatever travel I do is just for that book. And it doesn't matter that I've researched World War II a gazillion times for other books. I go in just with a lens for this book. And for this book, out came the Kinder Transports, which I knew about, but I'd never used before. And I needed the right book, and this was the right book to bring the Kinder Transports out. And that is a huge humanitarian rescue mission that not everybody knows about. I know traveling the country at the moment and talking to audiences, not everyone, I'm surprised how few people do know about the Kinder Transports.
Yes.
So, yeah. And Nicholas Winton out of Prague and all those children he saved who would otherwise have perished. So I loved that I could use that angle in the story. So yet the old knowledge really nourishes the emotion, actually, John, whereas the new knowledge is the actual architecture for the story.
Will you sometimes walk over the same places? Like, and like, you visit London for one book, and then 5 years later, 10 years later, you're visiting London for another book, and you've got, as you said, you've got different glasses on, you're seeing a different London in your imagination, or are you so separate, you've never done this before?
No, I've never. I try not to repeat the same locations.
Yeah.
I always want to find a new location.
Because London has layers and layers and layers, like your knowledge base is coming layers and layers at different times as well.
I might go back to the British Library, or I might go back to the British Museum, or the Imperial War Museum, or wherever I can gain knowledge from, or libraries and everything. But the actual locations, I'll always strive to deliver new locations, because the readers who really love my books are armchair traveling with me, and they say, oh, next time I go to London, I'm going to go and see that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a ton of people who are saying, oh, I've got to go and see Robin Hood's Bay now. And, you know, I mean, it's lovely, but you need to go there in summer, because it's a bastard in winter, let me tell you. It's freezing in January.
That's your little entry for the Lonely Planet. It's a bastard in winter.
Yes, one miserable sort of souvenir shop with Hard Rock, you know, and they were in the pub. We decided to eat in the pub where the characters are eating, because it's been there for forever. And, you know, we'd got in and it was like 12:30. She said, could you hurry up and order, because we don't normally... We usually close up by 1. And it was like, pardon? 1 o'clock is still lunch, isn't it? But it's January. No one comes.
Yeah,
the only people who come in might be the old guy coming in for a pint or something.
And so, some crazy author.
And some crazy author.
Coming to some story or something.
Can I just look at all, you know, can I just look at this and that? And can I stare at your floor for a little while? And
why are you pulling down the wallpaper? Because that's not original.
Exactly.
That's a good image. Fiona McIntosh undoing years of hard work to try and find the truth.
And when we arrived there, actually, I don't know if you know the movie called The Phantom Thread. Daniel Day-Lewis. It's a beautiful story. And I thought I'd found this fabulous new location, you see. I was very excited. And we walked into the Victoria Hotel, which was at the top of the hill. And I thought, oh, they could have afternoon tea here. And I walked in, I was very excited. And the lady wasn't impressed with seeing an author. She said, oh, no, look, we've just seen the film crew off from The Phantom Thread. And I said, do you mean Daniel Day-Lewis was here? And she said, Oh, yes, and they've repainted and they've taken it back to 1962.
Oh, God.
And I was just so lucky because that was my era that I needed it to be. And she said they've taken all the colours back to how it was and they've put in a floor for us and they've put in, they took away our bar and they've put a, they put all the wall sconces back in and everything. So I was very lucky. And I said, can I just sit where Daniel Day-Lewis sat? So they let me sit in his chair and sort of wobble my bottom around and look out of the window. And you can see it in The Phantom Thread if you watch the movie. And I'm using that exact scene myself. And I thought, well, you know, I didn't know, so I'm not pinching it sort of thing.
They have a plaque now with Daniel Day-Lewis sat here. And then Fiona
McIntyre.
Sat on top of him. Fiona, thank you so much for coming in. With all our discussions about your work, there's so many different layers we can unpeel. And thankfully, I haven't given you too much of a workover on how to write books like I have in the last couple.
But
now you know why. I was just really using you to help me write my own. Thank you so much.
Perfectly good. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
And you can get hold of The Pearl Thief at booktopia.com.au right now, and you can get hold of all of Fiona's other books as well.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.